What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Because you know, like at camps and stuff like this, you take the ball out, you ain't getting the ball back. Like, you the last one up the court, they already did their thing. So I stopped there, and I just got into a rhythm and started hooping.
The Lakers should sign Trae Young this summer.
They got to kind of start preparing for, like, if LeBron's last year is this year or next year, whenever it is. And I feel like a pick and roll with AD and a guy like Trae Young would be deadly.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back to another edition of All the Smoke. Jack, we got a special guest here, man. Former player turned owner. Like, a lot of people talk about that, but how often does that really happen?
Queen.
Welcome to the show, Renee Montgomery.
Well, thank y'all for having me, fam. Came to the show. Like it.
I mean, you had us both on your show, so it was only right to, you know, come back around, especially with all the amazing news that's kind of surrounding you of late. Let's, I mean, get into it. First and foremost, congratulations on becoming the first former player turned owner and executive.
Thank you.
Tell us how this all that came about.
You know, it started back in October. I felt like I wanted to do something different. And there was a lot going on. We know the A had a lot going on. There was Stacey Abrams shutting it down. The Hawks were very active with the More Than a Vote. So I just wanted to think, all right, how can we take this a step further? So then I thought, I started to see about Atlanta Dream maybe selling the team. So I'm like, you know, I started to just think about it, talk to some money people and see if we could get some coins together. It didn't really work out in the beginning, but then I saw a LeBron tweet, and I'm like, maybe they can get me in touch with the right people. And he got me in touch with the commissioner of the WNBA, Kathy Engelbert, and then after that, it was off to the races.
Mm-hmm. So leave it to LeBron, huh?
Yeah, LeBron. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because, like, I had already kind of tried to put in a proposal before, but we didn't have the funds there. We didn't have enough funds. And so it was more so of who's already in the bids and how can we figure it out from there. And
tell me what it feels like to think owner and executive when you literally just stepped away from the game.
It's crazy because my teammates is like, I think it's more weird for them because I was just playing with them last year. For me, I think it was the next step. Honestly, everything I was already doing was kind of moving towards the business side of things. I think athletes should be more on the business. I don't know why we're not more on the business side of things. We know the business better than anybody else knows it. So I've been talking about that a lot and just having the voice of the athlete. I know y'all been on teams where you're like, that makes no sense. Why are we doing it like that? Like, we know things that make no sense, but if you have suits at the top that never played, they have no idea. So I just wanted to be that voice. I think that was the main thing.
I think what's so amazing is that obviously Kelly Loeffler was the previous owner and, you know, all the attention surrounding this last voting process back in November. And, you know, she was running and really the turmoil started before that. You know, the team, you guys actually had kind of disagreed on some stances. Yeah. And one thing I say about the WNBA is you guys are so unified on all your messaging, which I even think you guys are ahead of the NBA on. Like, you guys somehow send, like, a smoke signal. You guys are all down for the shit, which I love. But talk to us a little bit about what it was like playing for her. And then once you kind of found out her true colors, when people kind of started shifting to the other side.
Yeah, you know, the WNBA unified, you said it, went into the wobble with the Social Justice Council. Right. So that's kind of how everything got on the same page. I wasn't even in the wobble, but they was hitting me up like, yo, this is what we doing. This is how we moving. So I felt so connected. And it was like, it's crazy being here in Atlanta and opting out because everything happened here. And it's not even just with the previous ownership, but just the runoff. Like, who would have thought we would have had a runoff? That never happens, but it happened with us, you know, here in Atlanta. And it happened the year I opted out. And so the players, I mean, you're right, like, just stood 10 toes down. Like, everybody just was kind of, like, posted up behind me, behind everything going on. So it's wild to explain because as it kept happening, it kept getting more and more traction. And then I was like, yo, this is kind of wild. Like, even as I was, like, in a part of it, I was like, this is kind of crazy what's going on.
Could you elaborate more on making the dream a destination team?
Yeah, we got to do that. Like, everybody loves coming to the A. Like, that's when you come to Atlanta, when you play Atlanta, people circle that on their calendars. They're telling their friends, everybody, that they're coming here, but don't nobody want to play here. Like, what's up with that? So I understand. I mean, even when I left Minnesota, we won a championship in 2017. And when I was leaving Minnesota, everybody's like, yo, you good? Like, they was asking me why I'm going to Atlanta. And I'm like, I don't understand. I've lived in Atlanta for 9 years, so I wanted to play for where I lived. But I don't know. We have to make it. People want to win, and just Atlanta sports have not won. So
entertaining, but
yeah, like, people love the city, but you love the city, but you want to win too. So as athletes, we have to make that next step. The dream, we're a little bit different in the sense of we've been to the finals multiple times, we've won, but the program just isn't there, the organization isn't there. So we're going to start treating the players like professional athletes. Mm-hmm. And I know on the men's side, that's normal for y'all. Right. But on the women's side, we don't necessarily get catered to like it is on the men's side. So that's what I want to do with the Atlanta Dream, just start making that destination.
They need to start getting the celebrities that support the guys and support y'all the same way.
Thank you.
And I think that's a big step because a lot of people come to the guys' games not even for the goddamn Hawks.
It's a party.
To see who at the game.
But
the women's team actually wins, so they need that same support. God damn it.
Yeah, so I'm going to see y'all at a game.
Yes.
It might be closed, you know, this season, but once everything opens up, yeah, we need all that star power. And even with what happened with NCAA, like,
that's weak.
That's a hot mess, you know?
Well, let's talk about that. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you guys have continued to fight for equal footing, equality, and then a perfect example. In the NBA, NCAA is super slimy and slick anyway, and if it didn't get called out, it would have gone unnoticed. It would have continued to be that way, but someone happened to call out a rack of weights when the men have every amenity
Olympic
you can imagine.
Facility.
But then they try to come out and say, instead of saying we're wrong, they make up some bullshit excuse that there wasn't plenty of room, and then someone shows there's plenty of room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what are your, I guess you just add that to the checklist of, you know, the fight for you guys.
No, and that's the thing. Like, if anybody's been around women's sports, it's not new. Like, in 2009, we won a championship. We went undefeated, and I'm sure that on the men's side, whoever won that year probably had double the swag back.
No,
like, you know what I mean? I'm not surprised. So anybody that's around women's sports, around sports in general, we know how it goes. Right. You know, we still flying commercial. We know how it goes. I went from at UConn, we were flying private.
You're supposed to go to the league and then take a step back.
You see what I'm saying? So if anybody's paying attention, this is not a surprise, but it's not acceptable. Like, we're not surprised, but we are disappointed that, man, like, that's an oversight. And so what they said was, we really didn't plan on having any weight rooms until the Sweet 16, but why not? That's the question, you know? Like, that, the excuse was that there wasn't any plan until the Sweet 16, but what about the 64? Did they not want to get in a workout?
They're full of shit.
The 32?
They were lying.
Yeah, so for me, I'm glad it got called out. If we're being honest, like, I was so happy that you had imagery, because people won't believe it until they see it. Like, some people have to see something to believe it. And so you saw the picture, you saw the picture, you saw the food, you saw the swag bags. You can't deny it. So now you got to do something about it.
What I thought was dope, though, you start seeing other male athletes post on it. And I reposted it, and a lot of people reposted it, you know what I mean? And that's the kind of attention, because as male athletes, our voices travel, you know
Big
what I mean?
Time.
Especially
Big
the guys
time.
Still currently in the league. So it's, we're all in this fight with y'all, man. We're going to keep pushing with you guys.
I appreciate that. And speaking of, no, shouts to a lot of college players spoke out. Ray Allen, I saw. Steph Curry, you. Uh-huh. Like, you guys, but that matters. Right. I think a lot of people don't know, but it's kind of the same what Stack was saying about going to the games. Sponsors care about
Who's
that.
There?
Like, it's like sponsors, they might be on for the wrong reasons. Like, you know, you saw all these sponsors post up like, hey, women's NCAA, do y'all need some weights? Like, you know, you saw them, but I just want to know, were they hitting up the women's side before that happened?
Right.
You know, like, who's buying in when it's not popular? Who's buying in before the noise happens? So if they keep that constant noise with allies like you guys, I mean, I think for whatever reason, the sponsors will like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Take us back to your upbringing, childhood. When did you find basketball?
Oh, man, I grew up dirt road. We didn't have, when I started practicing, I didn't even have a hoop outside. I was just dribbling all over the place. And then I did it for so long that my dad made a hoop, very unconventional hoop, but it worked. For me, nobody from West Virginia had been high D1 on the women's side. We have Randy Moss, Jason Williams, and all them holding it down on the other side. But no one had been D1. No one for sure had been in the WNBA. So for me, I was just dreaming. Like, and when I say that, I mean really, like, I didn't have anyone to kind of be like, oh, I want to be like that. Mm-hmm. I just, when people would tell me, well, you're kind of small, I'll be like, yes, I, you know, like, I'll be okay. But it was just the want to. You know, I think that's what drove me, just being in West Virginia. And I'm like, how am I going to get these coaches to come here and look at me? And so I started playing AAU, and just our team ended up being really good. We had Candace Parker was on our team. We started recruiting because we don't necessarily have the talent pool like that. So we started recruiting from all over, and we got on the map. And even when I became a McDonald's All-American, it was like when I was there, people were like, who is this West Virginia? You know, like it was like, who's this West Virginia girl? But, you know, it just, that country roads brought me here. And it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of what makes me, you know, I had to like dream it. So when people are like, oh, this has never been done, I'm used to dreaming about stuff that's never been done.
You got
to
say country times 10. You know, I went to Oak Hill.
Oh my God.
So it's country out there. Bro. Yeah. It's, you're going to get dizzy to get to your destination because all the roads just like
know.
That.
Let them know. So for me to be living here in Atlanta like this, like people don't really know how wild that is for my family and like my hometown. Like that's, it's crazy what's happening.
Yeah.
Very decorated high school career, three-time state champ. What stands out to most to you about your high school experience in basketball?
That fourth year we didn't win. Mm. I'm not going to lie. It was my senior year. So imagine winning every single year. And then on my senior year, we lose in the championship. So that's what stands out to me. And then it reversed at UConn. We lost my first 3 years. And then my senior year, we went undefeated. So I think with Hoopers, you definitely remember the losses more so than you remember the wins. I can remember things about the wins, but definitely remember that fourth year, my senior year, just not going out on top. But, you know, again, West Virginia, it's the competition was actually better than what people would think of. But it was like you still, even though I had won 3 out of the 4 years, I had to go to UConn like basically just fresh starting over. Didn't nobody care about that. Mm-hmm. Like people that played in Cali, New York, I had lots of teammates from those areas. They didn't care if, like, they were last place. They was like, we playing in New York. Like, you playing in West Virginia. Yeah. I ain't paying no mind. So just always just that proving yourself mentality.
It's easy to remember the losses when you win a championship on every level, at least 3 on every level. So I can see why you only remember.
It gets a little so cloud.
Yeah, all the damn championships.
I mean, I get it. No.
Which one?
I mean, I get it.
Oh, that loss. I can remember that.
Oh, it's right with me, but
you know, you do, I kind of feel like you do learn more from losses. Oh, obviously, you work hard to get the wins, but at the end of the day, you're not going to critique a win, you know, for the most part. You're definitely going to critique and remember, like, damn, I can get better. So, I mean,
that's how you grow from the losses, right?
Yeah.
What was your recruiting process like coming out of high school?
We started to get on the map, so I really could have chose anywhere I wanted to go. I chose UConn my junior year, so I didn't even wait. I was like, what y'all want me? I want you too. Like, let's do this. But it actually wasn't even, in the beginning, I was more so leaning towards Maryland because that's where my sister lives. So I'm like, all right, I can go to UMD. They got a good program there. And then I just went to my visit to UConn. This is kind of crazy. I had all the other visits lined up. I even put Hawaii on there because I just wanted, you know,
free trip. We know.
I wanted to see, all right, so you already know. I went to UConn and signed with them right after Kiesel. Yep. All the other trips, those were terrible calls to make. Mm. Just letting everybody know, West Virginia threw a fit because I didn't take my trip to WVU. I knew, like when I went there, they didn't roll out the red carpet for me. You know, everybody else was like, yeah, you're going to come here. You're going to start for years. I'm like, how many people are they telling this to, though? You know, like, I like transparency. So Coach Ariema was like, look, we already got a point guard. We know you're good. I don't know if you're going to start. You know, like, if y'all know Coach Ariema, he's the same way for recruiting. So I think the players that go there, I think it says a lot about the players because you got people.
Gotta earn it.
Yeah, you got people promising you the world. So people that go to UConn, Coach Ariema just doesn't move like that. So that says something about the players, I think.
Yep.
What was your college experience like? I mean, going to a legendary program, having a legendary coach, able to capture one title your senior year, but I'm sure the experience is something you'll never forget.
Something you'll never forget. I mean, well, I already went there knowing the point guards that were before me. So it's like, I think that's so what pushed me.
Not to cut you off, who was there when you came in?
So when I came in, it was Keisha Soignier. So she was 1 year ahead of me. So we didn't, it was almost wide open in a sense of that's kind of how I was making my, But when I say before me, I meant like Assu Bird, right. Jennifer Rosati, just that group of caliber of point guards. So for me, like I said, I welcome that type of challenge. Right. I'm like, dang, it's lit here. So you have to do something big to make an impact at a school like that. And UConn, while everyone knows that we are good at partying, we play good basketball too.
But I think
but it's like, no, and I say that because a lot of times it's like Storrs, Connecticut. People are like, what do you do up there other than party? But I mean, I think that the players, we have a sisterhood. You see us now, like we're all still close. Like it's not like we're all still cool. Like we're all still close. We got a group chat. And I think that's just the ties that we built. Like, we built a real sisterhood there. And I think that's the culture that they make you have because practices is so hard. Everything is so hard that you got to band together. Like, we all got to be mad at coach together because we're not going to beat him otherwise. Like, they make you figure it out together. So that's the thing I think I learned best at UConn, just that coach would do so many different things. We have practice guys. There would be like 8 practice guys against us, our 5, and we'd have to figure out a way to beat the trap, and we'd have to do different things. So he would always say, like, I don't really care what the circumstance is. Give me a solution. So I think that's kind of my mentality now moving forward on everything. Like, all right, whatever the circumstance is, there is a solution. Like,
got to find it.
Yeah, got to find
it. Absolutely. What was it like playing for him in particular, and maybe some advice that stuck with you early on that they got you through it?
There's so much. But I would say playing for him early on, people, you know, they always say coach has favorites, and people like to label me as one of those. But I still think I got yelled at some. Playing for him is like no other because everyone else on the other side hates him. And then you see, like, he's so down for you, and he makes people mad. Like, he'll say whatever you probably you're thinking as a player.
He got
your
back.
Oh, yeah, he's going to say it, and he's going to look at you in the face and be like, and? Like, you know, he's about that life, and so playing for him, it makes you like proud. Like, you want to prove, like, if he says something to the media, I'd be in the huddle, like,
down for him.
I'd be in the huddle, like, listen, y'all already know coach said that, so like, let's do our thing. Like, just the advice that he always just gave us was that no one cares. Like, people think that people care about your situation. No one cares. Like, they don't care if we're battling injuries, they don't care if we have no seniors. People never care. And so once you realize that in all aspects of life, like, your boss don't care what's going on at home. You know, like, no one cares. And so I've always kept that mentality. Like, people don't care why you're late. You late. Like, people don't, you know what I mean? Like, if you keep that mentality that no one cares, figure it out and do it right, that's kind of what stuck with me.
There's less stress you'll have on yourself, too.
Yeah.
What was your first impression of Mighty Moore?
I remember playing pickup with her, and I'm like, yo, she different. Like, you know, you can just, or you different. Just see people do stuff just like, she like, different. What was that? Like, you know what I mean? And then she do something else and you're like, oh, she's legit. And you just knew, I mean, and there's a lot of players that come out and just, real talk, there's a lot of players that get all kinds of hype. And then when you see them, you'd be like, they're okay. Yeah, you know, like they might be the best in that class, but that might be a weak class. So, you know, they're all right. She had all the hype, so you come in looking at her in that lens, and
she had all the game.
Yeah. I mean, as good as advertised. Just some of the stuff she would do, like, I would really just be like, Mama, I know you lying. And I got to play with her in college and in the pros. And so to see her in college, she already had that just raw, natural ability. She can do everything. But then to see her in the pros, and, like, she had honed it on, like, she knew she was a killer, and she was killing every night. Not that she wasn't in college, but you could just tell, you know, she's like one of those generational players that you talk about. You're not going to see many more like her.
Did you play with Simone, too?
Oh, you know I did. Simone Augustus, yeah. Our Minnesota team.
Y'all had a mob, bro.
I met Sylvia Fowles was on that team as well. We were. That's why people thought I was crazy.
Was
in 2017.
Y'all was deep. Your senior year, 39-0.
Yeah.
National champions. Yeah. Anything that stand? Any doubt ever creep in? Anyone ever come close to knocking that crown off during that run?
I mean, think about this: going to UConn and not winning a championship.
Period.
I mean, every time I tell somebody I go to UConn, they're like, "How many you won?" Like, that's the first question everybody asks. my junior year, I was sitting in the goose egg. So my senior year, I would say scared. I was terrified to go down as the worst in history. They let us know we would be the worst too.
Damn.
Like the coaching staff would let us know, like, we always win here. You know, like, you guys got to do it. And so I remember the preseason. It started in preseason, like, where I was turned up. Like, I was crazy. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I was on one because I just didn't want to be that one that left without it. And then you get halfway through the season. We haven't lost a game. And I'm like, all right, that's dope. But once you get towards the end of the season, you haven't won. You don't want to be that first loss in the tournament. You get bounced out. So I would say the whole season we were tight. And what I mean by tight is, like, you know, like, we got to do everything right because we don't have any more chance. I didn't have any more chances. And so my teammates treated it like they didn't have any more. And that was the dopest thing to me. We had a Tina Charles on that team, Maya Moore. And I think they wanted it more than me sometimes, in the way that they would be offended if people weren't doing things right, because they would be like, this is her last year. You know, like, they would get onto people using that as the incentive. And so that was probably the coolest part about that year, is how much everyone wanted it for me.
You still were able to have fun, though, even though you were. Okay.
You know, it was my senior year.
Come on, then.
It was my senior year, so let's be clear.
Hoisting the trophy up.
Yeah. Which one?
Ooh, she flexed on you, didn't even know it.
See? You see that? You see that? The light flex. I would say the last one, and being the first to be a Husky of Honor.
Yeah, you know, the UConn trophy, that was special for all the reasons that I just said. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, we did it. And we weren't even in the game at the end of the game because we was able to get up by enough. And I still was nervous. Like, I wanted the buzzer to go off. I wanted it to be done. Like, I don't want no problems. We know March Madness can get crazy. That one, I mean, that one's up there, because in college, you only get 4 years. In high school, too, like, you get a limited amount of years. And the pros, you remember the pros that didn't win championships. We can all name them, like, the greats that didn't win a championship. Like, there's a whole category.
Not us. Yeah.
You got them problems, but there's a whole category for that. So, you know, I was fortunate to be on some of those powerhouse teams. 2015 was a crazy year because Prince was there, and he invited us to party with him. 2017.
Oh, don't just go past that shit. Did it happen?
That really happened. Yeah,
with him?
Yeah.
No, I'm saying y'all kicked it with him?
Yeah, like, he threw a private concert for us. I was one of the, like, and I have to always preface this, they went all night. It's really crazy because him and his band, they literally put on a concert all night. They made us leave our phones at the door. They allowed us, though, this is how much they think about this stuff. They allowed us to have media there to write articles about it so that it wasn't just a memory that we could know, but no photos, no nothing. I was on stage with them. There's receipts for that. Like, I danced. Like, we didn't just play a game. Like, we was turned up. And it's crazy because, as we know, he passed away the very next year. So when we went in 2017, it was different. You know, like, they had a band that covered music, Prince's music, but it just...
So obviously not the same.
Yeah, it just had this feeling, like, this. It was a happy moment, but it had this somber feeling, like, dang, in 2015, we was just with Prince, and you know, he's passed away now. So I would say there's that different emotion. I also got traded halfway through the season in 2015, so it was a crazy year for me.
Backpedaling a little bit, winning a national championship at UConn, you got a chance to meet President Obama at the time. What was that experience like?
It was motivation. You know, like, my senior year, we got to meet President Obama. He had just got into office. I remember when it found out that he became president, we were at Coach Ariema's house, like, celebrating, turned up that we had our first Black president. And then we were like, oh, snap, we need to go in and win a championship and meet him. So when we won in 2015, it was the second time. He knew Maya because she had won every year since then, basically. So him and Maya were like besties. And it was pretty cool because him and Coach as well. It's different when he knows sports, you know, like, he was into it. He knew who we were. So that was a different type of feeling. We played pig with him, by the way. He's like, how much time I got? He's asking his people, like, how much time I got? They was like, you don't have time.
What was his jumper like?
His jumper, he's a lefty. You know, he's a lefty.
It looked all right.
It's all right. Like, you know that he used to be able to play some pickup and stuff back in the day. He had some, but we didn't even get to play a whole game. They were telling him, you don't have time. And he's like, all right, we'll play pig then.
But he
and they
made
was like,
time.
You don't have time. And he made time. That's dope. We went out there. There's actually some photos of me shooting with him, but yeah, we didn't get to finish the game. We got a little lefty jump.
That's cool. Yeah. So 2009, the number 4 overall pick, coming from West Virginia, going to UConn. Now you're the 4th pick in the WNBA.
Crazy, because
little old you, huh?
Little old me, but what's really crazy is Oh, it was wild because everybody was saying I was going anywhere from 1 to 10. Because again, it was that whole I have to every stage of my life I've had to like prove myself again. So when it became pros, I was too small. Like that was my scouting report. That like, yeah, she's good in college. It's a great system in UConn, but how can I? Yeah, like you know. So it went from anywhere I could be 1 to 10. So I was like thinking about sitting in that room, you know, when everybody's number's getting called and you're just sitting there. I got invited to the draft. My parents were there. Coach Ariema was there. And I'm like, I had no idea what was going to happen. Like, and that's a terrifying feeling. If anybody's ever, like, that's a scary feeling where you don't know where you're going to go. You just want to hear your name. So one passed. That was Atlanta at 1. Angel McCautry went there. Number 2 was Marissa Coleman. And then number 3, Christy Tolliver, and then it came me, and I was just like, I was relieved. I'm telling you, I was like, all right, let's get to work. Because again, I saw the press clippings. I knew that people didn't think I could be successful at that next level. So that's what I remember about the draft.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
My first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to
be my
name.
That's my game.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
2010, you're traded to Connecticut.
Yeah.
What was that experience like, starting to learn the business?
Yeah, and it actually was a little bit late. I remember when I got drafted, the Connecticut coaching staff, they basically was like, we're coming. Like, you know, like they were like, we're coming for you. You belong in Connecticut. And I was like, what? Yes. Like, let's go. It didn't happen that year. So it basically took a season, but I was excited. I mean, the 4 years at UConn, that's like my family there.
How far, not to cut you off, how far from like campus did you guys play?
Like 40 minutes. So not terrible, but the crazy part was there was already UConn players like on there. So it was, yeah. And then Tina Charles, we drafted Tina Charles that year. So it felt like college, no class. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is
fucking bar.
Yeah, you
say
already
that again.
Know.
I didn't really do too much class, but I feel you in college.
Well, we had to handle that type of business. So it became like, oh, what? Basketball is just the business? And then it was like the whole crew, Kalena Green ended up coming up there. So I literally had my squad in Connecticut. So yeah, we were off to the races for that.
What was your welcome to the WNBA moment?
I would say my welcome to the WNBA moment was losing a lot my rookie season.
Mm.
That was just something that I
used to.
We all experienced that.
Yeah, you know, it's a shock when you got to lose and you want to be mad at it and you got a scouting report for the next team that could be the next day or the day after. I had to really get used to that. Like, I didn't take losses very well. Like, I just, like, in college, we were taught that a loss is a big blow, you know? Like, we didn't have them very often. And then in the pros, we weren't very good. Like, we just weren't very good my rookie season. And so I just remember being like, wow.
Because you have that mix. You have the mix of people like yourself. I know I'm going to be here. How can we get out of this? You got people that's hanging around and know if they're going to be on the team next year. Then you got some motherfuckers that just don't care.
Man, they just trying to losing, get a bucket.
Man, how long the season is, man? You know what I'm saying? So it's a tough time. You know what I mean? Trying to pull all that together.
Exactly. And so I'm used to winning. So I understand more as you get in the pros. Like, I would be really upset after a loss. And they'd be like, chill. Like,
long season, girl.
Exactly. So that was my welcome to the WNBA moment where I was like, all right, I got to, like, you can still take them hard, but I got to, like, handle losses better. That's where I really, like, was like, this is the pros.
Mm-hmm. 2011, you have a career season, voted to the All-Star team for the first time. What was that like?
That was, we were rolling in Connecticut. And, I mean, I think we had three players that were All-Stars that year. Like, I can remember being excited that I wasn't going by myself. It was my first time, Tina Charles's first time. And so this is crazy because it ended up being my only time as an All-Star. I flew my whole family out. I got everybody hotel rooms. And I remember saying, like, this could be my only one. Well, you never know. Like, the league is unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen. And everybody was like, I don't think you should be spending all this money. Like, you'll be back. And it's crazy because that was my only All-Star. The very next season, my coach in the offseason came to me and they were like, we have no firepower coming off the bench. And I'm like, all right, cool. What's that got to do with me? You know what I mean? And then he was like, we need you to come off the bench. And I'm like, I was literally just an All-Star.
Remember last year?
The first, like, and so I went from being an All-Star starting all the games in 2012 to 2013 coming off the bench. And so that was a shocker to me because I was still young then. And so I ended up getting Sixth Woman of the Year, kind of just owning it. But it's the pros. You know, it's like the business of basketball, you start to learn it quick.
Talk to us what that experience is like. We talked to Lamar Odom about that yesterday when we interviewed him. Like, he was a starter. And then, you know, they wanted him to move to the bench. The same thing. The first year he moved to the bench, he won Sixth Man of the Year. Yeah. So what was that mentally like having it's a whole other mindset coming off the bench.
Completely different mindset. When I'm starting the game as a point guard, my first instinct is to, all right, who can I set up? Let's get her going. All right, I might have a little shot here and there. But when you come off of the bench, they want that, like, instant offense, that instant impact. And so, like, they first had to tell me, like, we need you to be more aggressive. Like, in that second unit, you're probably our first or second option. And so I had to be more aggressive in the style that I like to play, in a sense. Nobody's really going to be mad about having to shoot more. So basically he was like, look, the perk of coming off the bench is you're going to get more shots. So you had to I just kind of had to own it. You know, I talked to my parents because I'm like, this is kind of crazy. Like, I thought this is pretty wild that I was literally my first All-Star. I was excited. And then, like, my whole trajectory changed. And it changed my whole career because then everybody started to know that I could do both. And so
it's the same shit LO said.
Same thing.
So now, like, they wanted you to be that sixth man.
Every time. And I mean, like, big teams. Like, I ended up going to Minnesota where they didn't even lack nothing, but they wanted that extra off the bench. And so it started to be free agency. It made me be a commodity, honestly. And so I even told my coach, Coach Tebow, I was like, you know what? Like, at the time, I was not feeling it, but it makes your stock rise. Like, people saw me different. They saw me as a scorer. They saw me as that impact player off the bench. They saw me as a leader of the second unit, which people want. And so my young self was not feeling it. But as I got older and the contracts kept coming and I kept getting guaranteed contracts, I was like, there might be something to this versatility. Mm-hmm.
So 2015, you head back to Minnesota and you're able to get your first professional championship.
Yeah, that was a trying year. When I got traded, I was actually not even practicing with the team. I was at home in bed. There was a pig roast at our apartment complex, and like a dummy, I ate it. And I got salmonella poisoning. I didn't even know it was salmonella at the time.
What you ate?
Pig roast. I ate from, there was like an actual pig that they were, I know we're not supposed
no
to do
pork,
that.
No pork.
I know. And look, so now I can't even barely eat. Like, I learned my lesson.
I just had some good bacon this morning.
I was sick as a dog. And so they come to my apartment complex and they're like, yo, coach wants to see you. And I'm like, no, they know I'm not practicing. Like, and they're like, no, coach wants to see you. So we all know what that means. I'm like, what's going on?
We know
on?
What that is. Principal's
what's
office.
What's going on? I'm sick. So I go. Long story short, they tell me I'm traded. The Minnesota coach, Coach Reeve, calls me. And I'm like, coach, I'm really sick. Like, I don't know what's wrong, but I'm really sick. I hadn't got the test results back. She's like, I don't care. You got to play in 2 days. And I'm like, this is crazy. My family was there at the time visiting me, which ended up being the craziest blessing because I couldn't do anything. They packed up my whole apartment, put it in my car, shipped my car to me. And then I was heading to Minnesota and I was practicing and practice during the daytime, and at nighttime, I was like working out, trying to get my core together. Because anybody that knows anything about that, like, I was wrecked. Like, my whole stomach was just done. And so I didn't have any core strength. And I was working out crazy at night, tired in practice during the day because I'm working out at night. And then our starting point guard, Lindsey Whalen, ends up getting hurt. And the team, like, needs me for a big role. So I would say that was one of my, like, most memorable championships because people didn't know everything I was doing on the back end to try to get myself back to where they thought they were getting traded for a player, but I was, like, not the player that they were expecting at that time. And I can remember not remembering anything during that first game I played. I had an IV before the game and just thugged it out.
Tough. So 16, you guys go for back-to-back championships, lose 17. You get your vindication.
Yeah, and 16 was a tough one. We played LA all 3 years. Like, so it was like everyone knew it was going to happen. And then when they got, we lost on a buzzer beater. Very controversial, but they won. And so 2017, yeah, it was about that get back. Like, that was all we could think about, you know. And if you've won a championship, like, it's different if you've never won, but if you've won and then you lose it, there's a different type of want. Like, you want it because you know what it feels like. And so, yeah, we wanted that back. And I knew it was my last year on my contract. So I also knew, like, man, this is going to be crazy if we can win a championship this year. It'll set things up.
Boost your stock.
Yeah, it'll set things up. And so for me, I was just excited. Like, I'm like, we can. We had the talent. And so we ended up getting that championship. And like I said, it was fun.
So 18, you decided to bring your talents to Atlanta. You signed a multi-year contract. Like you said, you wanted to come play where you lived at for a while. What was that experience like?
That was dope. And I kind of knew what I was getting myself into as far as Atlanta was concerned. We didn't have the fan base. It's not there. So I went from Minnesota. We're literally selling out Target Center where the Minnesota Lynx play. Yeah.
The Timberwolves don't even sell out Target Center.
I wouldn't go watch that shit either.
Oh, my gosh. So we're selling out. You know, like, we're selling out the arenas. And so I'm used to when we run out, there's just white noise. Like, just the crowd is going crazy. And so in Atlanta, we would run out to ourselves going crazy. We would run out to us clapping for each other and having to get
that shit was like semi-pro with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
We had to be our own hype, man. And we, you know, as we started, it was crazy because everybody, remember I told you when I said I was signing here, everybody's like, you're all right, sis? Like, what's good? And then we ended up being the number two team that year. And so everybody was like, oh, you all right, sis? Like, and we were rolling. So we went into the playoffs, the number two team. And as the season started, we saw more and more fans kind of join in. And in the playoffs, we actually had a little crowd there, a little thump to it. So, yeah. So we Angel McCautry ended up getting hurt that year. I really think we had we were terrible the first half. And we lost two games the whole second half. Like, we were just rolling. Injuries got us. And that was about it. Yeah.
You never really shied away from the big shot. You had a clutch in your DNA.
Yeah.
Is there one moment that stands out?
Yeah, that LA game. We were playing against LA. We were both 12-0. 13-0 was like a record that no team had ever done. And of course, we were playing LA for that 13th win. That's just how things work out. And it was really crazy because I think my mom was getting cramps or was in foul trouble, fouled out. I don't remember, but she wasn't available. That would have typically been who shot our last shot. But so since she wasn't available, Coach was like, all right, Renee, yeah, you're in. And I'm like, oh,
time
snap,
to go.
Let's get it. Like, you know, so then, you know, when they tell you you're in, you're like looking at the clipboard real hard, making sure you don't mess your stuff up. She drew up a play for me, which is really crazy. Our point guard, Lindsey Whalen, was in the game, got an inbounds pass, drove the baseline, had a back screen coming for me. I can literally remember that there was like people on the sidelines. It was in LA. They were like reaching out to me, trying to like distract me. I remember that just because it was like all the hype involved with, like I told you, we play them every year in the finals. And so just to have that game winner against them and you didn't.
Was it baseline drive, baseline drift?
Yeah.
Back screen?
Yeah. That's the play. That's the one.
Knock
that's
it down.
The one.
Yeah.
For the game. For the game.
So
I think if we got one of those same plays in our history, me and you, the same type of play.
I made it.
No, I passed. You passed it to me.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
You made. Oh no, you didn't go baseline. You went down the middle. Remember, Beedron set the screen for
and
me in the
you.
Corner.
Yes. Okay, yeah. You're right.
I like this.
June 18th, 2020. You sent out a tweet that would kind of shape your trajectory, the trajectory of your, you know, your career and kind of find your life after basketball path. Although at the time you may have not have known, but you know, you decided to sit the season out to focus on social justice. Your former college teammate and pro teammate did the same thing. What was behind that thinking?
A lot. You know, I had seen what's going on. Atlanta, I told you, we were right in the thick of things. There were protests going on everywhere. It was on the news. So I would look out my window.
Shaw Brooks, all that.
Yeah. Like, I would look out my window. I could literally see the protests happening. And then I would look on the TV screen and be like, dang, like, Atlanta is really... Like, so for me, I was like, yo, I need to be a part of this. Like, I feel it. Like, and I would talk to my parents. And my mom was actually in Detroit during the Detroit riots. And so... she was telling me, like, baby, I think this one feels different. And I'm like, why? You know, and I'm asking her all kinds of questions. Like, why is this one different? And she's like, look at the crowd. Right. You know, when we did our thing, it was all minorities, like all Black people. Right now,
all
we
colors.
See, yeah. And so she kept telling me, like, I think this one is different. I'm like, yo, I need to be a part of this movement. Like, how do we pour gasoline on it? And so I was thinking, and I'm like, can I imagine myself in the bubble? Like, that's kind of what I had to think about, because we knew that's where it was going. And I just didn't see it. Like I really kept on. And this wasn't, like, people think I woke up and sent the tweet. Like, it didn't happen like that. Like, I knew, I was debating it for, like, 2 weeks. You know, I was trying to think about the pros, the cons. Am I going to quit my job? I don't even have a job. You know, like, I'm thinking about all those different things. But every time something else would happen or someone else would get murdered, I'm like, nah, this ain't it. Like, to me, it was like, this just ain't it. And so.
Enough is enough.
Yeah. Like, I really just felt like my heart wouldn't have been in it. And so. Everything I've told y'all, it's been about proving in myself, and it's all about passion for me. And so my heart wasn't going to be in it that season, and I didn't want to do that to my teammates, my coaches. So I just made the decision, like, to follow where my heart was taking me.
It's just something in you that's different. You know what I mean? A lot of people, to stand up for people that you don't even know, or stand up for the rights of others and all that, it says a lot about you to put yourself on the line for other people that you don't even know. And a lot of people don't have the courage to do that. You know what I mean? So yeah. For you, the stage you were in, the person you are and the position you in, for you to stand like that, like I told you on your show, that meant the world to me. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people have the platforms and have the position to say things for the betterment of all of us, but they don't do it. You know what I mean? And with everything you had to lose for you to do that, with so many of your sisters in the same position, it just meant the world to see for me. So I appreciated that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, for me, what was interesting about that was I didn't know where it was going to take me. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people think I had a plan. Like, I really
didn't. You was leading with your heart.
Yeah. Like, I really didn't have a plan. So that's why even sitting here and the ownership and like, in June, I was, like, thinking, all right, do I'm about to have to drive Uber? Like, I didn't know. Like, I really didn't know. Like, because I was already calling games. I was scheduled to call the women's NCAA, the G League championship, but everything got canceled. So it was like all my revenue, all my income was connected to sports, and sports like just got canceled. So I was like weighing that heavy. I had my family. And so I'm like, this decision wasn't just about me. And so, you know, thank you for coming on the show, because I felt connected to people like you all that are just, you know, that fabric, like you can just feel it when somebody's doing something for the papers or somebody's really
the
doing
right
it.
Reason.
So
right.
I wanted to make sure people knew this is not for clout. This isn't even clout. Like, I didn't know if I was going to get canceled, because if y'all can remember that Kyrie call, I was on that Kyrie call and it leaked and people were really mad basically to hear that Kyrie was talking about opting out basically. And so I already knew what people felt about players that opted out. So I was even debating on that tweet, should I tell people why I'm opting out? Like, I thought, because you could just say, hey, I'm opting out for personal reasons. Like, I debated that, but then I was like, nah, like.
You ever told the reason?
Yeah, like, I just wanted people to know.
Did you ever think, go ahead.
I was on the phone with him, you know, like, every day for 3 weeks up until that. You know
wow.
what I mean? We talked a lot, and I knew where his head was, but a lot of people don't understand. How could you worry about playing a game when you're seeing your people dying?
Exactly.
When you're seeing people getting killed for no reason. A game is not that serious.
It's bigger. It starts to be bigger than that, where you think, like, basketball, like, I don't even, like, you almost feel like you don't even have time for that now, because there's, like, there's something real going on right now.
Right.
And Kyrie, you can see that he got it. Yep. And that's kind of how I even gravitated towards it. It's like, I'm like, he really gets it. And now people start to see, because he's giving out scholarships. Yep. He paid some of our salaries. Yep. For the women that opted out in the WNBA, he paid
some of George Floyd, baby mama house.
Like, people, Like, he not just talking about it. And so that's why I'm talking about, like, some people, like, they just say it because it sounds nice. It's a sound bite. And there's some people that's really about that life, and he really is.
Obviously not going into the wobble, were you still proud of your sisters and what they were able to accomplish with their message?
And that's the thing. A lot of people thought that, like, when I opted out, I wanted everybody to opt out with me. I'm like, no. This is what I'm doing.
Right.
Like, this was what, like, I do. I'm glad that there was a WNBA season because look what happened. Like, look what the WNBA used.
A lot of attention.
Yeah.
Something we talked about.
The WNBA used this season to, these are things we already are passionate about, but we leaned into it. Like, if people don't know the WNBA, in 2016 with Minnesota, we already wore shirts that said Change Starts With Us because in Minnesota, Philando Castile had been murdered by the police at that time. So this wasn't new to any of us in the WNBA. It was kind of like in 2020, we were kind of like, oh, no. Like, enough is enough, to your point. And so, like I said, we had a pipeline. I felt very connected to the players in the bubble, and I think they felt connected to me. Even Birdie reached out to me one time. I was like, hey, you know, we're vetting Senator Warnock. We have a council that's helping us. And I'm like, oh, let me hear about this. And then I started to hear that Stacey Abrams, like, some big names were on the council. So people think that the players just printed the shirts and put them on and was like, yeah, this is how we. No, like, there was real processes done. They were vetting people. They were thinking this out. And so for me, yeah, we were united. And I wanted people to just felt like, I wasn't calling people like, yo, you opting out with me. I think people wanted me, like, thought I was doing that. Nah, like, everybody that opted out, that's what they had in their heart.
You guys, well, I mean, I said this when all of it happened when I was doing ESPN, but you guys have been fighting for equal footing, particularly just as women in sports.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when other issues come along, when it stands for equality, it makes all the sense in the world why you guys
exactly.
are so unified when it comes to that, because this is not a new fight to you guys. Like
it's
you said, you've
not.
Been fighting the good fight, which was, you know, police brutality, but you guys have been fighting since you started dribbling a basketball about equal footing and respect in this space. So that's why it wasn't surprising to me. And like I said, I think the NBA took notes from you guys because you guys were on your shit. Instantly, together,
yeah.
whether you're in the bubble or not,
yeah.
you guys were together. And I think that's, you know, that showed. And now some, he and I went back and forth on, like Jack mentioned, because he didn't think people should play. I thought they should play.
Yeah.
And I thought they should play because our voices travel. Like, you're going to hear LeBron and you'll probably hear mm-hmm. CP, but do you hear the guys that aren't those top tier
yeah.
superstars without the NBA logo behind them, with the NBA logo behind them, with the WNBA logo behind your female counterparts, our voices travel around the world.
100%.
You know what I mean? And that's what was my point from that.
And to that point, like, I see both sides because I see what Stack is saying too. Like, imagine if there's no WNBA and everybody has to answer to why. I mean, you know, and then it happened, you know, and I thought, I talked about it. I said, okay, so the NBA stopped because of COVID the first time. The second time the NBA and WNBA stopped was for racism. Like, who would have ever, like, is that, that's wild to think about when you think about. People don't really realize how much of a business sports are. I think people have a hard time understanding, like, sports is strictly a business. I know you guys see it as a game, but for a big business, big corp to shut down because of racism, that's not likely.
Serious.
Like, that's not likely.
And they really didn't want it, but the players made it, you know what
exactly.
I mean? The players made that shit happen because, you, like you said, this is big business, big money.
Business.
Like, that's the last thing they want to see, but they got to respect it because,
there's
like
contracts,
I said, we have a voice
TV
now.
Contracts. You don't play that game. There's somebody that's supposed to be getting paid for you playing. Like, there's so many things that the NBA is a business, and the WNBA is a business. So I think that they took that and they made these businesses have to focus on social justice. So that's my only reason for liking that they had to play, because when the players weren't going to play again, what did the NBA have to do? They were calling the owners. They said the owners got to get on board. They were making, they forced the NBA's
hand.
And because they needed them to come back. So I really do see both sides in a sense of, like, you have to change the, it is a business, but the business we know needs to change. Like, we all know that from the ownership group on, like, I don't understand why there's not representation in ownership group. Even in the NFL, they have to make a rule,
right.
The Rooney Rule, to try to get people.
The fact that they have to make that rule already
tells
you how crazy
thing.
This shit is. People, oh, there's a rule for it. Why should there be a rule
exactly.
for you to give equal
incentives?
Opportunity to
Because it's
minorities.
Cool to work for them, but not work with them.
Exactly.
That's always been the situation.
They hire people
you
who look like
him.
You
can be out there and play, but you can't own. Nah, them days over.
Well, to me, I think they hire people who look like them. That's why it's so important for her to be in an
yes.
ownership position now, because you hire people who look
it's
like
all
you.
About
it starts
who
at
you
the
know.
Top,
they
then it's management, and then it works its way down.
It's
so.
Not what you know, it's
who
you
know.
And so if who you know is who you know, you don't know us, well, like, then you're not going to hire. You're going
right.
to hire somebody you're
right.
comfortable with. And so you already know that's what we're doing here in Atlanta. Like, that's our focus. Like, day one now. The people we hire, small business, minority-owned business, like, that's literally our whole focus now.
So, love it. So you were a big part of More Than a Vote all the way through the runoff with, you know, Senator Warnock, or which you spoke on. How important was that to you?
Big time. It's crazy because I know people had to be tired because we were banging the drum since I can remember in June where I threw a Juneteenth pop-up block party at Centennial. And I'm like, man, people are really turnt right now, but November is far away. Like, I just kept on remembering, like, dang, November is so far away. Like,
keep them engaged.
Yeah. Like, I started to create a campaign called Remember the 3rd of November because, like, we're passionate right now, but I hope people understand, like, you got to take that passion to the polls. Like, you got to fight people at their own ground. Like, we can be mad and do stuff and protest, but you got to go to the polls. So I remember thinking, like, circle in the calendar, November 3rd. And then we had the runoff, and I was like, oh, my goodness, we got to go at it again. Like, you got to rev the engines up. So that's kind of what I remember, just being like, look, I know y'all probably tired of it. I know, like, no one wanted this, but we got to just one more time. Because I don't think people even knew that you got to go back. You know, I think people are like, no, I already voted for that. Like, so just kick my vote again.
And then it's still coming 2022 and then 2024. And that's the engagement we don't really understand. But what was it like? I mean, you guys had a big hand in flipping a state.
That's wild.
Insane.
Yeah, it's wild. And even as it was happening, you know, like, I was doing stuff with Stacey Abrams at that time, Civics for Culture. And I'm like, this is really crazy. Like, I told you, and you guys know, when you're in the thick of things, it's kind of hard to see it from, like, the bird's
outside,
eye view.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So I was just in it. Like, they was hitting me up like, yo, we trying to do this. And I'm like, I'm down. Like, what's up? So it was kind of just like that type of situation. And then as we watched on the news unfold, like, we're watching national news unfold, and it's looking like we might pull this off. And I'm telling you, it's something that, like, probably after a while, like, it'll sink in. But I don't even think we knew the magnitude of what we were doing. But when people started to tell us that Senator Warnock was, like, polling in the single digits before, you know, we started to campaign for him, that's pretty crazy to see what happened. So, yeah.
Life off the court has been going amazing. You announced your retirement in February. Are you at peace with that?
Yeah. When I announced my retirement, I knew that you couldn't be a player and owner. So people didn't know that at the time, but I had to get, you know, my affairs in order. So I was very comfortable with it in a sense of, I don't feel like I left anything out there. You know, I felt like, obviously, I would have loved to play, like, one last season and have that, you know, that farewell season. But to me, like, the way I played, the way I prepared, I really did feel like I gave, like, everything I had. And so I didn't feel like I left anything out there. And then I thought about the bigger picture. I'm like, for me to be an owner and to be able to be the voice of the players, like, the players, I know problems that we have right now here, that just was driving me. I'm like, man, we got to make this happen. How can we make this happen? And I'm telling you, my fiance just were backing me. They were my battery pack.
That's important.
Because sometimes I just, like, I got discouraged, like, real talk, because I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to get to this seat at the table. It felt so far away, and I was trying to reach out to people, but I'm trying to do it on the low because I'm still playing. And I just didn't, like, sometimes I got discouraged, but my family like, no, you're going to be this owner. You know, like, they were really, like, sometimes they was on my head, like, no, this is for you. Because sometimes I'll just be like, all right, we'll find a different way. Like, maybe I can be in the front office, and I would change the way. But my family, like, they knew it. Like, they saw it for me before I did. And so that's what I think about the most with that, because there were times, like I told you, I started in October. And people don't know the long process that took. So there was times where I'm like, oh, man, it's Christmas. Let's just, like, let me just enjoy Christmas instead of trying to plot and plan and figure out. But I'm so glad I did. You know, that was a long journey. But, like, we're here. I'm so thankful.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano. And we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18, my first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
My first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my game.
There's two kinds of people in the world. People who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha. AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You just stated that we talked about, you don't really understand the magnitude of what you're doing while you're in the mix, but have you taken a step back and like said, like, Renee from West Virginia is an owner of a professional sports team? Have you had a chance to kind of do that yet?
Listen, I'm about to go back to West Virginia for my sister's wedding next week. I think that's when it'll really, you know, like when you get back to like humble beginnings, because right now I've been so busy ever since it happened, like I have been really busy.
Move, right?
Yeah,
when you take a vacation, that's when it's gonna hit you.
Yeah, I think so. So like once I can ever get some time, like, because right now I'm covering March Madness, you know, like it's like I don't have to worry about a job anymore, and that's a blessing, because at a certain point I really was worried.
What's next?
Yeah, I was really worried. And so now I think, like, to Stack's point, once I get that time, that vacay is coming in June. Once I get that to just kind of just like be like, what just happened?
Yeah, your fiance gonna be laying around. It just gonna hit you.
Yeah.
Like, damn.
Probably some joints.
Look where I'm at. Yeah.
Look where I'm at now.
I can't wait.
You mentioned you're covering March Madness. You did some broadcasting early in your career. Obviously, you're great, you know, relaying your opinions and thoughts. When did broadcasting jump into the picture for you?
I went to school for it. So, you know, I went to UCO. I was a communications major. You know, sometimes you pick a major just because, like, just give me anything. Like, I had teammates that did that. Well, I'm the daughter of a college professor, so.
No games.
Nah, yeah. I was in the baccalaureate program in high school. Like, I had to be, like, all of those honors things. So I went into college, like, I was actually gunning for two majors, actually, and I finished. Ended up with a minor, but I knew it. Like, I kind of am a planner. Like, I plan my whole life out, really. Like, even when I was young, I told you, I was in West Virginia dribbling on the pavement. We didn't have concrete. And I'm like, I'm going to go D1, even when I was young. There wasn't even a WNBA until I was 11. So I was just thinking D1. And I've been planning ever since, honestly. But, yeah, at UConn, that was the plan.
So just announced a new podcast.
Yeah.
Take Line. How did that come about?
Yeah, they reached out to me. I did a, it's crazy because I got multiple jobs from interviews like that I did with a platform. So I did an interview with TMZ Sports, like they wanted to talk about me opting out. And then they offered me a job to co-host TMZ Sports. Then I did an interview with Pod Save America, and it's on the Crooked like network. And so then that's how they saw me on that. And they reached out to my manager and was like, hey, I think we want to do sports and culture where they meet, basically. And I'm like, I mean, that's my whole life. And they were just like breaking it down. Jason Concepcion is the host. They're looking for a co-host. Did a couple, you know, interviews, and then they called me like, okay, so we want to roll with you. What's next? And that was dope because, like, as you all know, y'all both were on my podcast, Remotely Renee, and so I didn't know how that worked. I'm like, can I do two? Like, I don't really know how all that works. So I let them know, and they were cool with it. My podcast is a little different than that. So, I mean, it's been really cool because the topics that, you know, y'all both done TV, the topics that the TV tells you to stay away from, that's what we talk about.
Goddamn right.
That's what we talk about. So That's dope for me.
Your guys' first guest was Jeremy Lin. Obviously, we're in a weird place right now where Asian hate crimes are popping up every day. How was it talking to him? I mean, Jack and I both know him. Great dude, very, very well spoken, and really kind of a fixture for that community. So how was it talking to him and kind of hearing his point of view?
It was different because, you know, we're used to being oppressed. Right. You know what I mean? Everybody understands our history. They understand why we're mad. Some people do. Some people don't. But people understand. They get it. But when it comes to Asian hate, I feel like they have to almost explain to people why they're mad and then allow to be mad. And I think that's the struggle that, you know, a lot of the Asian community has. And even here in Atlanta, where we just had that shooting, like, it's unbelievable because we can relate. You know, like, as far as minorities are concerned, we know what it's like for somebody to not like you but hate you. Like, that's a wild concept, to not know somebody at all but you hate them. And so I think that, you know, that's being experienced for different cultures right now, and it needs to be almost a point where minorities now, they're starting to see we have the same problem.
It's us.
I think a lot of people thought that this was a black problem.
No, hell no.
You know, like, a lot of people really thought this is a black problem. This is a black community, black and brown community problem.
We've had it the most, but it's all minority
exactly.
problem.
Exactly, and I think that's starting to be seen more. Mm-hmm. I think the Asian community is starting to gravitate to allies, and they know that we're an ally because we get it. And so I think just talking to him, and even him, I mean, as people know, like, he was called, I believe, coronavirus on the court. I mean, that's athletes, you know, like, so that's crazy because I never had a teammate or someone like say something crazy to me on the court. I don't know how I would handle that. Like, I don't really know. Like, I've never experienced that. So he even experienced that.
And the way he handled it was great.
Amazing.
You know what I mean? Like I said, he didn't want to get them in trouble. He didn't want to call them out. He wanted to sit down and educate them. It's big.
Amazing.
He's a big person.
Amazing. He's a good guy, because I just don't know how I would handle that if somebody said something wild to me like that on the court. And so I think they just understand that, you know, the communities are allies now. Like, let's be allies and educate.
Right. When you said it's not just our problem, that was one thing he spoke about when he was doing the marches, was he's like, Matt, I seen every single color out there.
Yeah.
And struggling, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not just a black problem, a brown problem. It's a minority problem, the way the system is set up. It's a white problem.
It's because there's a lot of people that didn't realize it was a problem. That's a problem.
First and
if you didn't know there was a problem, that's a problem, because it's all around us.
Spit in your face.
It's all around us. And so that's even going back to the NCAA thing. People have to see it. Like, they need to see it. So when they saw the video of George Floyd, I think that's the first time some people really got it.
Like, and some people still wanted to deny it, and he should have did this, and he was doing that, and I'm just like, nah,
come
bro,
on,
you, did
playing.
You watch the 9 minutes, or did you fast forward through it?
I haven't, mm-hmm. but I right. think that was very eye-opening for people, because they're like, wow, how could somebody do that? And for us, we're like, you know, we know that's happened plenty of times before, basically. And so, like I told you, in 2016, we were talking about this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even the first instance for them. And so when people start to realize that, and then they start to go down that rabbit hole where they start to, that's that rabbit hole where they start to, mm-hmm. you start to educate people on stuff, and they don't want to believe it. So they go to Google, and then they're like,
oh my gosh,
yeah. And then you start to see that eye opening. That's what happened a lot in 2020, I think. And so, I mean, I don't mind if you don't, like, it's one thing to not know, but if you know better, do better.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Who are your top five? Let's go to another conversation. Get me away from that, because, you know, I'm baby Malcolm X around this month. All right. Who are your top five players in the WNBA right now?
Oh, my gosh. Well, y'all, really? That's tough. And we're talking about in their prime.
Sure.
Right now, just period.
I mean, I'm going to have to go... Shoot the UConn special.
can't go wrong. No. Y'all can get y'all whole team that played the WNBA and win some WNBA games.
Yeah, that would be lit. I'm going with Diana Taurasi, Tina Charles, Sue Bird. I'm just saying, like, I got it rolled with my dogs, but and that's a fact. Like, people argue it if you want. Who else? Breanna Stewart.
Mm. That's cheating.
I'm just saying, like, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to give you the UConn special, and that's why I said, argue it if you want to.
Are you five?
No, I'm not in the league.
Oh.
She's an owner now, bro.
She's an owner now.
In case you forgot.
Yeah, I forgot that.
No, but I know the men always put themselves on the teams. I wouldn't even do that.
Yeah, because
anyway.
I'm going to forever be nice.
let's see. Who we going to go with? We got a point guard, a shooting guard, and Diana. Stewie, I'll put her at the four. TT, if she had to be. Oh, let's go with Sylvia Faust.
I was about to say that.
Come on.
You can't leave her out.
She's going to go down as the greatest.
She's
and like I said, I was going to do a UConn special, but that's my put. And she's, I mean, if we're talking fives, that's it.
She a winner, too.
That's it.
She's a winner, bro.
She's like the most gentle giant killer. If you talk to her, you don't know what she's about to do to you. But, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
She goes.
WNBA is about to celebrate 25 years.
Yeah.
Tell us about the progression you like and what more you feel needs to happen.
I like that. So let me just tell you a progression. 2016, we wore the shirts. Change starts with us. We even put a police shirt on there. That's crazy because we wanted people to understand. We got fined for that. Mm. And they told us, if you want to keep wearing that shirt, you're going to keep getting fined. So basically, the WNBA was not rolling in 2016. And again, this is the summer before Colin Kaepernick took a knee. So this was unheard of for people to do what we had done.
Right.
And the WNBA was just, I mean, to give them a defense, this had never been seen before. We just rocked up with shirts we made and wore it for warm-ups. And so they weren't feeling it. They were not with it. And they basically, and then other teams joined in and started to wear just black shirts. And it became like a little movement. And the WNBA was not with that movement. And so then when you fast forward to 2020, we dedicated our whole season to social justice. Breonna Taylor on the back of our jerseys, I'm saying we're moving in the right way. They're now starting to listen. In a sense of, like, we're going to do this regardless. Mm. Like, they kind of, and I think that's the thing about the women's players. We have this, like, it's going to happen. So what's your stance on it? That's going to be on you, but this is what we're going to do. And they just really, like, they kind of leaned into it. I mean, for them to put Breonna Taylor on the back of all of our jerseys, that's pretty big. We did a Say Her Name campaign every week where we talked about it. You know, they the national anthem, you know, there was just different things that we were allowed to do. And I say allowed to do because they could have fined us, but they leaned into it. So the year 25, it's looking good. I think that they get it. You know, the hashtag is counted, I think. Don't give me the lion. But they even they have legends coming back. They're owed to the people before us. And I'm big about that. Like, I feel like I'm old school in a sense of, like, the OGs are the OGs. Like, let's like always put them on a pedestal. So it looks like the WNBA is going to do that this year.
It's good to know we had Cheryl Swoops on, and she said that was the one thing that bothered her so much.
Happy birthday, Cheryl.
Happy birthday.
You're going to get on my nerves.
Happy birthday to the legend. I love her. So, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, we should honor our OGs way more than I think what we've done. And
Absolutely.
So even in the new promo, the advertisement, Lisa Leslie was narrating it.
Dope.
So, you know what I mean? They're on the right way. They're in the right direction. But, yeah, she, come on now. That's not even her. That's Coop, but hey.
Give me your thoughts on the current Hawks squad and what they need to win a game or two.
Excuse me. We were on an 8-game road win streak.
Yeah.
Let's be clear.
Nate McMillan's going to change the temperature a little bit.
They won eight straight? Yep.
We won 8 straight, and then last night we lost to the Clippers. We were actually up by like 20.
Mm-hmm.
We were up like 20 and ended up losing to the Clips. I think everybody knows we got that nucleus that we could make some noise, but we're not consistent. And so I think that's why you remember us losing. We just won 8, but everybody remembers us losing because we just haven't been consistent. But it's been fun covering them. Trae Young, I think that snub was the best thing that could have happened to us. You know, like, he got snubbed this year. The only player in the top 10 scoring that didn't make All-Star. I mean, it was just wild.
The record had a lot to do with it. It was just the record.
I don't think so. But if the records matter, then we should check a lot of all. I mean, what is the criteria then?
Well, the only reason the only reason Randle made it because they was tied for fourth at the time.
Fourth
through eighth,
that's just
ninth, they was
year.
All tied.
That's this year. There's been a lot of play. Like, I never know what the criteria is for MVP, for All-Star.
It's
changes.
Just what they feel.
Exactly.
And it's a lot of people who never played basketball who have a say-so. Mm. So,
hello, somebody.
Don't let me start.
Hello, somebody.
Since we're in the NBA season, favorite player to watch?
Play no more, but go ahead.
Yeah, if you guys ain't playing, I ain't really watching, you know what I'm saying? But I would just go with Trae, just because I get to watch him night
Every
in, night,
night
out.
Night.
And he's, and I mean, he's flashy, so it's not even like I'm just picking him because he's the Hawks. Like, he does some wild stuff in the game.
I've been in the last 20 years. He's by far besides Joe was cool, but he's the most exciting player to watch since I've been living in Atlanta.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's just like what Steph Curry brings to the game that changed the whole game. Like, they're shooting from the logo, and that's a good shot. Like, you know, like, it's like, you don't even be like, dang, that's a terrible shot. Like, when Trae shoots it, I'm like, oh, that could have, you know, that's all right.
Yep.
That's all right.
You have a finals prediction?
Finals prediction. Man, injuries, though, that's the thing. Like,
tough.
It's tough because, I mean, we all would assume that the Lakers would find a way to be in the finals if they're healthy. But now, you know, first AD and then LeBron. I don't know. I get nervous trusting teams that play well in the regular season because we've seen a 76ers. Every year we think that they're going to be – every year they – I mean, Joel Embiid, people are talking about him for MVP. I know, but if you're talking about MVP caliber person, if you have the team, why is the postseason always such a struggle? You know? Like, so – for me, I'm trying to think, like, who are some dogs in the league?
There's a lot of regular season stars.
Yeah, there's a difference. There's a difference. That Portland team is always interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when you got a player like Damian Lillard, who it don't matter who he's matched up against, like, he going to show up. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to be in the finals, but I think they're going to be somebody to watch. It's, the West is so tough, but I don't really have a prediction. It's too crazy right now.
What does that say about Brooklyn? Their best players hurt, and people still got them going to the finals. That's how good they are.
And you know what? I got to see it, too.
You got to believe it, huh? You got to see it to believe it.
I got to see it because we talk about playoffs again. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen.
We talk about playoffs with KD and Kyrie and James, though.
Okay, yes. But we're talking about playoffs and we're talking about injuries as well.
Right.
And so a couple of those players, like that's why I said injuries aside, if we're talking everybody has their dogs, I'm going to say Brooklyn and L.A. Mm-hmm. in the finals. If everybody's playing and everybody's healthy, I just don't know if that's going to be the case.
Yeah. Recently, Shaq had a comment that the hoop should be lowered.
Oh,
Candace
Lord,
didn't take
Shaq,
too well to it.
No, I was about to say Shaq, no.
Thoughts about it?
Oh, I think that's so wild. Like, should y'all's hoops be raised? There's too many people dunking. I mean, I don't know. Like, is it too easy?
It doesn't matter to me right now. I'm slapping net. So.
Yeah,
right.
I'm bad at touching net, too. But what I will say in y'all defense, I'll take some women on some of my NBA teams before some of the sorry motherfuckers we had on my team. A lot of them men didn't belong in the NBA. They didn't care.
Man,
no way. So I would have took a lot of y'all way before some of the teammates I had.
I'm just saying, we don't need to change the game that Naismith created. That is so silly just because, and I mean, if you ask people why to change the game, it's literally one reason for dunking. You know, like it's not because women don't shoot well enough from the three. Maybe the rims are, it's always just dunking. And so if that's like, and I know that's what the NBA prides themselves on. I know, but this is casual fans talking.
Yeah,
this is casual fans talking because they don't know that. I mean, Candace Parker was dunking at a certain point. You know what I mean? So people are only basing that on dunking. And so if you're doing that, then you're not really taking into account what the women's game is good at anyway.
Right.
You know, like we play actual fundamental basketball, not saying the men don't, but we're not even allowed to travel. So think about that. We have to pivot. We have to take only two steps. That's different, you know? And so I think that, if you're saying the rim should be lowered, then you don't really appreciate what's already going on in the game.
Right, right.
Considering your journey to where you are now, where you sit, what is a piece of advice you would give to an aspiring young lady looking to be an athlete or more of even a business owner?
You know, I think with women, it's different. Like, at UConn, a guy could be, like, the 11th man on the team. You couldn't tell him he wasn't going to the league. Like, you really could not tell. Like, guys have this, like, inner boastfulness that they believe in themselves. And so women will critique ourselves until maybe we shouldn't even go to the WNBA. Like that's how we think about ourselves. And women, we tend to almost dim our light because we think about, well, what are people going to say and what are people going to think? And so I think if nothing else in 2020, I think that young girls should see that like women, like we got something to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think that even you don't see a lot of women as many as you should in high management positions. Shouts to our VP Kamala Harris now. The first time. Think about that though. That's the first time in history that a woman has held that high of a position. Why? Like I don't think it's for not being capable at this point, but I think it's the norm and how people treated women and how people, you know, having a woman boss. I've been in positions where I'm on the call with my manager and people are talking to him like he's the talent or he's the one because he's a guy. So you got another guy talking and that's just how it happens. And so I think now I think young girls should realize like there's not a position that we can't hold.
Absolutely.
It, even though if it hasn't happened yet, it doesn't mean it can't. And so I think that just that boldness, we need to have that same. We don't have to be arrogant, but we need to have that same inner thing that guys have where you, like I'm telling you, it could be a guy that hasn't played pickup in so long, but if somebody's like, check up, you be like, what? Like, you know, like guys just have that.
Yeah, it's a bad thing too.
That's why I said, not too far.
Yeah, that should get you hurt. See, one thing men need to do that women do more than we do y'all more real with y'allself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We'll wake up and feel like, y'all can go do it, knowing damn well you can't do it. That's that false hope. Don't fall for it.
Yeah, but that's that confidence too,
that's
though.
That confidence
you see,
too.
Like, that's that confidence. So that's why I said a little in between, take a little bit from it, but women just are way too real almost. Mm-hmm. Too real in a sense that we might dim our own bright light. And so I would just say, yeah, that's over with.
Mm-hmm. Quick hitters. First answer to come to mind.
Oh, Lord.
Spit it out. Toughest player you ever had to guard and why?
Avery Latta. She has a
the
quick
fast
tip.
Ass.
Yeah, I don't, because I'm used to being the smaller player, so I don't like when people are under my dribble, and I don't like when people are quick as me and different things of that nature. So yeah, she's a tough guard.
North Carolina.
Yeah, shouts to Avery.
Top. Oh, did we ask that question?
No, you said current.
Top five WNBA players of all time.
All time list.
Lord, why you do that to me? Let's go, Tina Thompson. Cynthia Cooper.
That whole team.
Sheryl Swoops. Yeah, I know, right?
Like, they whole team.
Run it. Sheryl Swoops, Cynthia Cooper.
The Houston Comets.
Yeah, like if we're going to name teams.
The Houston Lakers.
Dawn Staley.
Oh, my favorite.
Come
of all
on.
Time.
Come on now. This is hard because, I mean, we're talking OGs. I told you I like to pay respect. And so there's so many. Let's see. I mean, we could put it. I mean, let's go Maya Moore. She not playing.
That's probably,
yeah.
That's a tough five.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there's, I could think of an honorary five and right. a six, but yeah, I'll just roll with that. Let's
go. Top three basketball movies in your opinion.
Ooh. So I just was talking to Ray Allen. So we got to put, he got game on there. You said, did you say basketball or sport?
Basketball.
Okay,
basketball.
Cool. Then Love and Basketball, White Man Can't Jump.
That was two out of my three.
Five dinner guests, dead or alive, who would you invite?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to ask Jesus to sit at the table right quick. Got to ask you some questions. Let's have a little chitty chat. I'm going to go with Oprah. I want to see what she's talking about. I'm going to have Barack Obama there. Let's have let's substitute Barack for Kamala Harris. I want to see what she's talking about. Get some women at the table. That's three. Ooh, what is her name? Shirley, the lady that ran for president. Shirley. Come on now. Come on, baby Malcolm X. What is her name?
We didn't get behind her.
Chisholm.
Shirley. Yes, yeah. Shirley Chisholm ran for VP. I want to talk to her because imagine her being that bold. She was already writing the president's speeches, and then she's like, you know what? I'm just running for myself, so I want to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
Have a little chat. Who else? Let me see. Actually, I'm gonna have Abraham Lincoln sit at the table because I want to see where he really stands on a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. We give him a lot of credit for stuff, so
let's really see what you're talking about, eh?
Yeah, like I want to really.
Me to tell you.
I want to really hear it, like because I feel like he was progressive for that time, but I want to have a chat and see.
If you had could have one message on a billboard.
You might need a lie detector. They gonna get the
truth.
Well,
we got politicians at the table, so I already know.
Get the truth.
And then you have wooden dentures, too. Breath probably smell like a bum nutsack.
Might look a little crazy.
Yeah. One message on a billboard for the world to see.
Moments equal momentum.
Ooh.
Say it again. Quick.
Moments equal momentum. I think that everybody doesn't realize how big things can get, but I opted out. That was one moment. Mm. Through a cookout. That was another one, and things started to just spiral after that. Retired, that was a moment, added to the momentum. Became an owner of the FCF Beast, the football team. Then became one of the Atlanta Dreams. So, yeah, all those moments, that's how you create your own momentum. You create your own moments.
Right. Great answer.
If you have one person that you would like to see on All the Smoke, who would it be?
Ooh.
But whoever answers, you have to help us with that guest.
That's very clever. Let me think about that. You already had Simone Augustus on here?
Nope.
And that's the homie.
Hold on. Let me just think, make sure. Because I think she's so different in a sense of she's a sneakerhead, but she likes like all of the stuff. She has a Louisiana background, but let me think.
They can't be ignoring your calls no more neither because you're an owner now. So that's just going straight through one ring. No, yes, Renee.
It's not tampering, is it?
No.
You know, when I'm calling the NCAA, I get so many tweets like, was that comment you just made tampering? I'm like, I have to talk about the players that are playing. I'm going to roll if it ain't Serena Grace, who's an upcoming artist, I'm rolling with Simone Augustus.
Simone Augustus, that's how I'll go with that any day.
Well, Renee Montgomery, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Queen.
Y'all appreciate it.
Can I get some food before
yeah.
I
What you mean? What you want? What do you need?
Yes.
On the house.
On yes, the house. Yes. I like that.
On house. Showtime.
Swipe it.
That's the house.
Get that business card. Yeah, swipe yeah. that
We swiping that thing.
That company card. Like... Yeah, that company card's in Jack's pocket. Anyway, that's a wrap. All the smoke. Thank you to yes. our guest again, Renee Montgomery.
Thank you, sweetie.
You can catch us on Showtime Basketball, YouTube, and the iHeart platform, Black Effects. See y'all next week.
This is All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.